Stumbled Upon podcast. I am your host, Kate, and each week we'll be taking a deep dive into a topic that has sparked my interest. I hope that you're all having a wonderful Friday. This week's topic is Lake Michigan. So you may be wondering where that one came from, and it's really two places that I got that from. So the first is this creator on TikTok. She also has a YouTube channel. Her name is Geo Rutherford, and she does a series during the month of October called Spooky Lakes Month. And each day she talks about a new, quote, haunted hydrology, where she talks about different water formations that are spooky, lakes that are spooky, that kind of thing. She also has a book, and it is titled Spooky Lakes, 25 Strange and Mysterious Lakes That Dot Our Planet, and it is gorgeous. She did the artwork for her book, and it's just absolutely beautiful. I would highly recommend getting it. It's very interesting. Her content is great, and she also has a coloring book coming out later this year, which I have most certainly pre-ordered, so give her a watch if you're interested in spooky lakes. The other spark for this story comes from one of my uncles. He was telling a story about how many years ago, him and my aunt and their two daughters were at Lake Michigan, and they were at the beach. My aunt stayed on the beach, was just kind of sunbathing, and my uncle and my two cousins were out in the water. This was when they were younger, maybe, I think he said they were maybe like 8 and 10 or somewhere around there, maybe 10, 12, I don't really remember, but regardless, they were young, and they had gone out into the water, and they were just kind of swimming around, playing this, that, and the other. He said the water wasn't very deep. It was maybe 3 or 4 feet deep, and they had waded out pretty far, and the girls could swim, and then all of a sudden, they get stuck in this current, and he's trying to get to them, and he gets both of the girls in his possession, and then he's trying to swim to shore, and he just is having the hardest time swimming to shore. He said he was trying not to panic or make it seem like he was really struggling while the girls were hanging on to him because he didn't want them to get traumatized from it. And ultimately, you know, with adrenaline and enough of a push, he was able to make it to the shore safely with the girls. And then, you know, the joke of the story is that the first thing he said was, "Don't tell your mother what happened," while he's like laying on the beach gasping for breath, right? So that got me thinking about Lake Michigan, really the Great Lakes in general, and how I don't really know that much about them, truthfully. And so I decided to look up Lake Michigan and see what the whole deal is with it. Now, where did the Great Lakes come from? So during the last ice age, which began approximately 115,000 years ago and ended approximately 12,000 years ago, the Laurentide ice sheet covered most of Canada and the northern United States. The massive weight and movement of the glacier formed the lake basins. Then, about 20,000 years ago, as the climate warmed, the glacier retreated, with water from the melting ice sheet filling the basins left behind. This formed the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes reached their present shapes and sizes about 3,000 years ago. So in the span of the Earth's history, not too long ago, they were created. The Great Lakes currently hold about 20% of the world's supply of fresh water. And to put that into perspective, if all of the water of the Great Lakes were spread evenly over the continental U.S., the 48 states would be flooded under more than 9 feet of water. So just imagine what a 9-foot swimming pool is like, and then put that over the whole entire United States. That is a crap load of water. So what makes Lake Michigan so special? It's the only Great Lake that is contained fully within the United States, and it is the second deepest lake at 923 feet at its deepest point. Arguably, it's the most dangerous of the Great Lakes because it is home to about 1,500 shipwrecks, which is 25% of all wrecks that have sunk in the Great Lakes, and 38 drownings in 2023 alone. Now, that represents 45% of all Great Lakes drownings for the year. It can seem just from those numbers that it's really dangerous, but taking that with a grain of salt, the other Great Lakes have similar dangers to Lake Michigan, but what makes Lake Michigan so much more dangerous is that it has more sandy beaches compared to the other lakes, so it's attracting more people. The more people that you have in an area where there are dangerous currents and things like that, the more likely they are to get hurt, right? So it would make sense that because Lake Michigan has the nicest vacation spots, then it's going to have the most drownings and deaths due to the dangers of the water, right? Now, the beaches in northwest Indiana and southwest Michigan are the most dangerous because wind from the north and west form large waves, which can turn into swift currents. According to the National Weather Service, Great Lakes waves come in closer together than ocean waves. So on the Great Lakes, it's about every 3 to 5 seconds on average, compared to the ocean, which is about every 5 to 25 seconds on average. This is what makes it harder to recover if you're knocked down, because you are constantly then fighting a battle against all of these waves that are crashing in. In addition to that, dangerous currents are more likely as waves get higher, especially above 3 feet. I wanted to look up where currents in the Great Lakes came from, because when you think about a lake, you don't really think about rip currents, or at least I didn't. You know, in my mind, a lake is too small to have currents like that, right? So you'd think in the ocean, yeah, rip tides and things like that are dangerous that you have to watch out for, but I wouldn't think about it in a lake. And the currents in the lakes can form from any combination of wind, waves, bottom formation, beach slope, water temperature, or man-made structures. And I did look into the most prevalent currents, or the most prevalent dangerous currents that are found in Lake Michigan, and there are 3 that I wanted to talk about. So the first are rip currents, which is what my uncle got trapped in when he was trying to get my nieces back to shore. And a rip current will form when waves break over a sandbar near the shoreline, and then the water and its momentum get trapped in that space between the sandbar and the shore. Then, when the water and that momentum build up enough pressure, the water will find an escape route to relieve that pressure and get back out to the main body of water, and that escape route is the rip current, which is a narrow, powerful stream of water and sand moving swiftly away from the shore. These currents won't pull a swimmer underwater. Instead, it will carry them out to the open water, which is what makes it so dangerous. Longshore currents are another dangerous current that you can find in the Great Lakes, and these move parallel to or the long way along the shoreline, which is where they get their name, and they often occur between the first and second sandbars near the shore. These can become dangerous if they move a swimmer down the beach and into the path of another dangerous current or into a physical structure. The last kind of currents that are dangerous, well, it's not the last kind of current, but the last kind of dangerous current that I looked into are structural currents, and these are found alongside or as a result of structures like piers and breakwalls. They're often dangerously strong and can push a swimmer into the structure, causing injury, or into a longshore or rip current, creating a washing machine effect with no clear path out. So that's why they always say not to jump off of piers and things like that, because you can get stuck in these currents, and then if you can't make your way out of the current, you know, it can cause some real injury and harm, and possibly even drowning. Now, these types of currents can be permanent or variable. Permanent are always found in certain locations. They just vary in strength. So, like, structural currents would be considered permanent because they're always near that structure. It's just sometimes they're stronger than other times. And then variable currents have both varying locations and strength, depending on the shape of the lake bottom, wind, and wave conditions. Variable currents have both varying locations and strength, and these are dependent on the shape of the lake bottom, wind, and wave conditions. So rip currents and longshore currents would be examples of variable currents. Now, there is a phenomenon in Lake Michigan that is referred to as the Lake Michigan Triangle. It is not actually scientifically validated. However, its legend is known pretty well in that area, and it's kind of spooky, honestly. So, Lake Michigan definitely qualifies as a spooky lake. So this triangular space is in sort of the main body of the lake. You can look up where the actual area of the triangle is. The cities that it touches, you know, like the three points of the triangle, I can't really pronounce very well because they're in Wisconsin and Michigan. And I don't know if you know anything about the names of places in the Midwest, but they can be tricky to pronounce if you're not from that area. Really, though, actually, just as a side tangent, the names of a lot of places, if you've never lived there, can be difficult to pronounce, and then you just look like a doofus when you try to pronounce them. For example, in Boston, well, not in Boston, but in Massachusetts, there are many different city names that have lots of letters in them, and you do not pronounce all the letters. So my husband and I went to Massachusetts to visit some family, and we played this game where we would be driving on the highway, and we would pass a sign for the next exit, you know, where it tells you what the town name is or the name of the area, and he would point to it and tell me to pronounce it. And I got them wrong probably 9 out of 10 times, which was pretty funny. And just for example, Worcester, Massachusetts has like 37 letters in the word Worcester, and you only pronounce like 3 letters. So the same could be said about lots of areas is what I'm getting at. And I didn't want to butcher these names in Wisconsin or Michigan. So to bring it back around, you can Google where the Michigan Triangle is located on Lake Michigan, but it is home to shipwrecks, weird events, and plane crashes. It's not, like I said, recognized scientifically, but, and also they don't really know why. It could just be the fact that it's essentially the center of the lake, more or less. And so the likelihood of these events happening in the biggest part of the lake are higher, just like the likelihood of there being the most drownings on Lake Michigan beaches is higher because it has the nicest beaches out of all, or the most accessible beaches out of all the Great Lakes. So it's kind of hard to say, is this really statistically significant or not? I don't know, but it's interesting to learn about the urban legends surrounding this area. So some of the things that we do know that have occurred in the Michigan Triangle go all the way back to 1679, when René Robert Cavalier is a fur trader who has a lot of money, is a very wealthy kind of explorer and fur trader in this area. He also, just as a side note, when I was trying to look up how to pronounce his name, I saw the different things that he had done in his lifetime, and he is part of the reason why Louisiana was claimed. So pretty interesting. He like went all the way through down into the Mississippi Valley. He was exploring all over the United States, or I guess it wasn't the United States at that time, but he did a lot of exploration kind of throughout the Midwest, Great Lakes area, and then down the Mississippi River and into the Gulf area. Anyway, back to 1679, he is a fur trader and he builds the largest ship on Lake Michigan called the Griffin, and he loads it full of fur to take back to Europe. Now, this ship was a large ship and it was loaded down with fur. So tons of money here to be made, right? Just before it sets sail, the local Native Americans warn him and his sailors that sudden storms can occur on Lake Michigan and they need to be wary. Well, this warning is ignored and the ship disappears. The wreckage has still never been found. They have never found a single piece of that ship. No fur, no bodies, nothing ever washed ashore. It just completely vanished. Then in 1875, there's another ship called the Rosabelle, and it's a 100-foot schooner, and it's found floating upside down with no damage at all. The 11-man crew disappeared with no bodies ever recovered again. With no evidence of foul play or bad weather, the ship is still in such good condition that it's put back in service for another 50 years until October 30th of 1921, when it's found floating upside down again with its 11-man crew missing again. And not only that, but once again, no recovery of bodies, of belongings that may have gone into the water, nothing. It's like they just completely vanished. Moving forward in time, in 1950, it's June 23rd, and a Northwest Orient flight from LaGuardia is headed to Minneapolis with 55 passengers and three crew. The weather starts to get rough, and it's said that it was just kind of raining, and maybe there was some lightning, so it's like a pretty bad thunderstorm happening. And at about 11 p.m., the captain radioed air traffic control and asked to drop down to 2,500 feet, which is essentially under the storm. This request is not something that is considered unusual, but then all of a sudden, the flight completely disappears off the radar. The Coast Guard goes out to Lake Michigan and cannot find the plane, despite the fact that things like luggage, clothes, and bodies start to surface. They still, to this day, have not found one piece of that plane. And what's even more wild about this story is that there is a yearly expedition that goes out to look for this plane specifically, and they have still not been able to find it. And we are coming up on, 75 years that it's been, and still not a single trace. The last kind of spooky story related to the Michigan Triangle is one that occurs on land. In 1978, a man named Stephen Kubecki was cross-country skiing near Saugatuck when a couple hours later, some people on snowmobiles come across his gear just laying in the snow. The police are called and they find footprints that lead out onto the ice of Lake Michigan, but then they seem to just disappear. There's no evidence of broken ice, so even though police ultimately determine that he died due to accidental drowning, there's no proof that he actually fell in the ice. They cannot find any broken ice anywhere, so it's once again like he just disappeared without a trace. At this point, he's presumed dead and has a memorial service and all of that, but then 15 months later, he wakes up in a field wearing clothes that aren't his near his aunt's house, which is 700 miles away in Massachusetts, and he has no memory of how he got there. Initially, he spoke to some press, but then he went radio silent for the rest of his life. He actually, if you Google him, he has a website, and on that website, you know, he like gives these little teaser answers where he's basically like, oh, you know, most frequently asked questions are like, what happened to you when you disappeared or whatever? And he's like, I will answer that in my new book. So he's trying to promote this book. From his website, it says that he's still looking for publishers to publish his book. So obviously at this point, he's like trying to make money off of his story, which, you know, good for you. Like, live your life and do what you got to do to make a book. No shame in that at all. But it makes me wonder about the validity of his story. If he's now going to tell it, like, why would you not tell it before? I don't know. Maybe it freaked him out so much that he didn't want to talk about it before. I don't know. But how do you just go from Michigan to Massachusetts with no memory whatsoever? And as if you disappeared. Really, the thing is the way the teaser sounds and the way they talk about this story is obviously they want you to think that it was an alien abduction, right? That's kind of what it's alluding to. But he doesn't actually come out and say that. Nobody actually comes out and says anything like that. So it's hard to really say one way or another. But I'm sure he has an interesting story to tell, but also the skeptic in me is like, well, how can we explain this rationally? You know what I mean? I love a good urban legend or a ghost story or things like that. I'm really interested in that stuff, but I'm also incredibly skeptical. One thing that another content creator had said, and I cannot remember what this was in reference to, but they said, basically, do not ascribe supernatural cause to something that can be explained by the mundane, was essentially what he said. And I believe that to be true. You know, I'm not going to go off onto an alien tangent or anything like that at this moment in time, but I think it's important to have a healthy dose of skepticism, and I think it's important to recognize that science can explain a lot of this so-called paranormal activity or supernatural activity, that kind of thing. And I don't think you should discount a scientific explanation, but I also think you should remain open to the possibilities of things happening that cannot be explained by our science or even our understanding of how things work. Take that for what you will. And in conclusion, even though the Great Lakes may be smaller than the ocean, they are still no less dangerous. Anytime you are in or near any body of water, you should be aware of your surroundings and definitely don't go too far out if you're not a strong or experienced swimmer. Also, maybe check your flight path if you're traveling through the Midwest, you know, just in case. And I'm not saying the Michigan Triangle is real, but all the wrecks are strange, so maybe there's some sort of phenomenon that they'll find one day. Or, like I said, maybe it's aliens. Who knows? Stay safe out there and have a wonderful weekend, and I will be seeing you next Friday. Bye!